Good morning and welcome to the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. This morning, I am especially delighted to welcome as our guest, Special Agent in Charge Richard L. Lambert, Jr. of the FBI. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I feel like
I have to
say it like that because I want it to be like the beginning of the TV show with Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., you know?
You sounded very officious. Great job.
Rick Lambert is the SAIC. Now that I am an alumni of the FBI Citizens Academy, so I feel like, A, I should be standing during this interview, and B, I also feel like I can call you, you know, SAIC.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, you are as Special Agent in Charge of the Knoxville Field Office. It's not just Knoxville you're responsible for. What's your sphere of influence? How wide a swath of Tennessee do you cover?
Right. The FBI actually has 56 field offices across the nation. And in Tennessee, we have two. We have one in Memphis and we have one in Knoxville. And the state is basically divided in half. The Knoxville Field Office covers the eastern half of Tennessee, while the Memphis office covers the western half. So specifically, the Knoxville division covers everything from Chattanooga all the way up to Johnson City and all points in between.
Okay. And one of the areas that you have, I guess I thought was especially cool to find out about was Oak Ridge, because there's so much that goes on right there at Oak Ridge. And in your agents, the agents who are under you, have what do you call it? Not a field office, because you're the field office, but another little satellite office out at Oak Ridge.
We do. We have a small satellite office in Oak Ridge that we call a resident agency, and that is because of both Oak Ridge National Laboratory and the Y-12 National Security Complex. And in fact, it's the mission at Oak Ridge that was responsible for the formation of the Knoxville FBI field office back in the 40s. That's why an FBI presence was actually stood up here, was because of the Manhattan Project and the work going on at Oak Ridge.
And even to this day, you're still busting people for espionage out in Oak Ridge.
Yes, unfortunately. Well, the good news is there's an awful lot of good work, cutting-edge, leading-edge technology going on out there at Oak Ridge National Laboratory. The bad news is our adversaries have figured that out, and they very much want to acquire our national secrets that are housed there.
Mm-hmm. And one story that made the news, I guess a couple of years ago, was it Roy Lynn Oakley?
That's correct.
Who was arrested for attempting to sell some kind of secrets to the French.
That's correct. Roy Oakley was working at the East Tennessee Technology Park, which was being demolished. Back in the day, it used to be used as a facility to enrich uranium through a process known as gaseous diffusion. Now, that technique is now antiquated, mm-hmm. and we've moved on to other methods or mechanisms of enriching uranium. But nonetheless, the process is still classified, and there were a number of components used in that uranium enrichment process that Roy Lynn Oakley decided he would hide in his work clothes and try to carry out, and then try to sell those to the French government for about $200,000 is the price he was demanding.
But the FBI took him down.
We did. Fortunately, we were able to intervene there and get those parts back before any damage was done.
We're talking with Special Agent in Charge Rick Lambert of the FBI's Knoxville Field Office. I've got a gazillion questions, but the most important thing, really, and the thing that is probably relevant to most people listening, is the mission of the FBI in our community. I mean, you have, through the program that I recently completed, the FBI Citizens Academy, you reach out to educate the public all throughout East Tennessee about how they can help out and help keep our nation safe and secure. What are some of the major bullet points then as the mission of the FBI in Tennessee?
Well, the FBI actually has a very broad-based mission. We have a number of priorities, and right at the top of the list is counterterrorism. Protecting the United States from another terrorist attack is mission and job one for us right now. Under counterterrorism is counterintelligence, the kind of work that we do at Oak Ridge National Laboratory to make sure that we are able to protect our national assets from foreign intelligence operations. And then after that, we investigate cybercrime, also public corruption, civil rights violations, major white-collar crime, violent crime such as street gangs, and organized crime.
Mm.
So it really covers the entire
gamut. And you got some bank robberies in there. And
absolutely. Violent crime is certainly one of the things we investigate. Bank robbery, kidnapping, extortion, those sorts of crimes.
Wow. All the stuff you associate with the TV version of the FBI is all under that umbrella as
exactly.
Well.
Exactly.
All right. Of those, I'm especially interested in talking this morning about the internet crimes and about terrorism. And I think because terrorism is something that we've lived with in this country since 9/11, it became more aware to the American people. Let's start with that. What is your take on the current state of the terrorists planning and plotting against the U.S. and our interests all around the world? And what can we as citizens do about it?
Well, the unfortunate reality is that we are more at risk of a terrorist attack today than we have been at any point since 9/11. And that's simply due to the terrorist operational tempo over in the Middle East. We're seeing a lot of coalescing of different Islamic extremist factions coming together, striking new alliances. As a result of that, al-Qaeda is growing bigger and stronger than it has ever been before. Mm-hmm. In terms of what we can do about it, what we know from certain manuals that we've captured, al-Qaeda training manuals, is that mainly all terrorist attacks go through three phases or stages. First of all, the terrorists conduct what they call research and reconnaissance on their target. Then there's a planning stage where they actually acquire the weaponry or the weapons of mass destruction that will be used for attack. And then thirdly, there's the execution. Now, where our greatest opportunity is to thwart an attack is when the terrorists are carrying out that research and reconnaissance stage. Mm-hmm. Because in order to do that, they have to exhibit certain conduct and engage in certain behaviors that if we're really alert, we can pick up on.
Could those behaviors be confused for normal tourist activities or stuff like that? I mean, what's the difference between a terrorist taking pictures and me taking pictures for my blog?
Exactly. And that's what makes it so very, very difficult, is because all of these research and reconnaissance activities could, in fact, have a legitimate explanation. For example, if we see someone underneath a bridge taking pictures of the structural supports, mm-hmm. that could be someone engaged in that research and reconnaissance who is taking those pictures so that he can calculate the explosive payload that would be necessary to take out that bridge.
Right.
At the same time, it may simply be a student who is studying architecture at the University of Tennessee and is taking those pictures as part of a class project.
Exactly.
Right. But the point is, we have to inquire. We have to take some action. We have to follow up on those suspicious activity indicators to resolve them one way or the other as innocuous, benign activity, or perhaps something more nefarious.
Now, we often think about terrorism attacks. We're talking with Special Agent in Charge Rick Lambert from the FBI. We think about terrorist attacks after the security checkpoint at an airport, because that's, you know, when we take off our shoes, that's when we take off all our metal and we get scanned. What about the stuff on the other side of the checkpoint? I mean, what can we do while we're waiting in line to keep an eye out and spot somebody, you know, before it's too late? You know, is it just the unattended baggage? Is that the main thing that we're looking for at that point? Or,
well, as you pointed out, most of the baggage that's gone past the checkpoint has been screened.
Yeah.
But really, it's more looking at suspicious behavior of people.
Okay.
People who seem extremely nervous, want to avoid eye contact, look to stage themselves so that they get onto the airplane either first or last.
Okay.
And it's very difficult thing to do because, again, many of those indicators have legitimate
sure.
explanations.
Sure.
It may be the person's first time ever flying on an airplane, and so they're naturally nervous.
Well, the thing about unattended baggage comes to mind because you hear that announcement in the airport. You know, do not leave your bags unattended, you know, because that's obviously before suicide bombers became aware to us, we would think, oh, someone might leave a package and then they'd go run away and the package would blow. You know, so that's something we always are now looking for. Oh, did that guy leave an unattended bag? Who do I call?
Exactly right. And that is something in the airport we've got to be especially cautious about.
And not just the airport, too. I mean,
right.
any public gathering, right?
Exactly. The terrorists have had great success with that technique, particularly over in the Middle East, of just taking a briefcase laden with explosives and setting it in a public place. And inevitably, somebody comes over, picks it up, or tries to open it up and detonates the explosion.
Oh, boy. All right. Now, also, I'm interested in all the other things we can do about to fight terrorism here in East Tennessee. But because New York was the target for 9/11, is there a certain assumption by most people in the public that in New York, Chicago, LA, the big cities are going to be where they're aiming next? Or is it possible that they'd be looking at, you know, the heartland of America like us?
I think al-Qaeda in chief is looking at those big, major, iconic targets to take out, still looking at, you know, Wall Street, for example, or Disneyland in Los Angeles that would make a huge impact. The problem for us, however, is many of these homegrown terrorists who become self-radicalized by looking at jihadist information on the internet. And a good example of that is the recent arrest of a young man up in Sudbury, Massachusetts, named Tariq Mahana, who was planning and plotting at the time to simply go into the local shopping mall there and shoot as many people as he could before he himself was taken out by responding police authorities. So that kind of thing, I think, can happen anywhere, and we are certainly as vulnerable here as any place else in the United States.
All right. So someone who becomes a member of Al-Qaeda on their own, I mean, I guess you're not technically a member, but they would absorb the message somehow and decide that yeah, I'm going to go do that.
Exactly. Oh, decide
wow.
to act.
All right. Well, while we're on the topic of terrorism, I mean, there was domestic terrorism that we dealt with in this country first when, Timothy McVeigh exploded a bomb in Oklahoma City. What's the difference then between, what drives somebody like that, like a domestic terrorist versus these homegrown Al-Qaeda types that you're talking about? I mean, is it kind of the same thing, two sides of the same coin?
It is. Terrorism, the way we define it, is basically any act of violence that is intended to further a social, political, religious, or an ideological agenda of some sort. Obviously, when we talk about international terrorism, it usually is some faction that is concerned with propagating radical Islamic extremism.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about domestic terrorism, it takes a lot of different forms. It can take the form of the Ku Klux Klan, which we know back in the 60s actually lynched a number of people in furtherance of their white supremacy outlook. We have somebody like Timothy McVeigh, who bombed the Oklahoma City Murrah Federal Building out of an anti-government bias or prejudice. So, and then we see people like Eric Robert Rudolph, the abortion clinic bomber, who was a very, very pro-choice and was carrying out terrorism to further that particular cause.
So he was against the pro-choice movement. Is what you mean by that? Or
right, he was against the for the pro-life movement. He was anti-abortion, and as a result, he bombed a number of reproductive health clinics in the Atlanta area.
Okay. Rick Lambert, the special agent in charge of the FBI, you mentioned the word internet, and of course that reminded me to go back to that. We've been talking about terrorism. We're talking about all of the mission of the FBI here in Knoxville and throughout East Tennessee. Internet crimes have got to be a completely new category, something that maybe – I'm not trying to age you here, but when you went through the academy, did they spend a lot of time on internet crimes?
No. I mean, when I went through the academy, there was no such thing as an internet. When I went through the FBI academy back in the late 80s, there were no computers even in FBI field offices at that point.
Really?
Right.
Y'all did it on the IBM Selectric.
Exactly. The IBM Selectric. Exactly right.
All right. Well, we learned a bit in the FBI Citizens Academy about internet crimes, specifically internet crimes against children, which are especially horrifying and galling. But keeping in mind that we're on a family radio station, let's get into this dark area of internet crimes and what's something, again, that as citizens we can be vigilant about, and what kind of success is the FBI having in that area of thwarting internet crime?
Well, it is a massive problem, and for whatever reason, it is especially prevalent here in East Tennessee. We see a lot of trafficking.
Okay,
pornography.
Compared to what? The other field offices that you network with?
Compared to a lot of other field offices. We have, in the last 3 years, we've identified 41 children residing here in East Tennessee who have been depicted in online child pornography.
Oh, my.
So it is a huge problem here, and
I do not
know why it's disproportionate to the rest of the nation, but it certainly is.
I did not realize that it was disproportionate in this area.
That is
shocking to me. Now, but you've had some success identifying purveyors of child porn and tracking them down, right?
We have. We through a number of undercover platforms, we try to seek out those websites that are serving as platforms for the trading.
But this isn't just an FBI thing too, right? You have to deal with the local police as well, or—
Well, the local police, we have an Internet Crimes Against Children's Task Force here in Knoxville that is actually headed by the Knoxville Police Department.
Okay.
It is supported by the FBI as well as a number of other state and local agencies. So what we try to do is pool our resources and bring those together so that we can have maximum impact on the problem.
What about non-sexual internet crimes? We're talking about, you know, money scams and, you know, is that the Nigerian banker that I'm thinking of? Or what kind of other internet crimes do you guys deal with?
Well, that certainly is one. The financial fraud, the phishing scams that are out there where these people try to get you to reveal your bank ATM numbers or your bank account numbers and your PIN numbers under the ruse that your account has somehow been compromised and you're suddenly receiving an email that purports to be from your bank asking you to test your security passwords. There is an endless permutation of those types of scams, and trying to stay out in front of those and keeping the public educated with each new variation that rolls out is certainly a challenge.
Well, it seems to me, now I'm someone who's been on the internet for a long time, but it seems to me that every time there's a new platform of some kind, you get a lot of the same scams come back. For example, when email was the thing, you know, we all got the spam emails. We all got sick of that. But now that older folks, my mother included, are getting on to Facebook, for example, there's a whole new set of Facebook scams, even though some of it's the same old junk. But they're using Facebook, and people don't – their guards are down because we've gotten used to the idea of, oh, email is dangerous. Be careful on email. But Facebook, oh, I love Facebook. It's got pictures of my grandchildren on it. It must be safe. I'll give them my password. Do you know what I mean? And there's that. It's a different – it's the same, but it's different.
You're right. I think there is that false illusion of security or safety once you get into a particular website that is known to you. But as you pointed out, there certainly are scammers and fraudsters that are lurking at those sites just looking for opportunities to – you know, exploit the more naive.
We're talking with Rick Lambert from the FBI. Now, your history is interesting because you're not always – you haven't been in Tennessee forever. You had a great case that you worked on in D.C. before coming here. Can you tell us a little bit about your personal history?
Well, sure. This is actually my fifth field office of assignment, and I've done three tours at FBI headquarters in Washington, D.C. before coming to Knoxville in 2006.
Is that considered a good gig? Like, you know, it's a reward to get sent to Knoxville, or do they?
Well, in actuality, it works a lot like the military in terms of rotating in and out of the Pentagon. You'll rotate from the Pentagon out to a field assignment, then back to the Pentagon.
Oh, okay.
It's just kind of the management track.
All right, I understand. Yeah. Okay.
But before coming here to Knoxville in 2006, I was working in Washington heading up the investigation into the anthrax attacks of 2001.
Mm-hmm. And that's when people mailed or somebody mailed powdered anthrax to some of the news anchors and like the National Enquirer and places like that, right?
That's correct. And to the two senators in Washington, D.C., Tom Daschle and Patrick Leahy.
Okay. And there was, as I recall, was it the man in Florida who died at the National Enquirer?
Right. He was the first death, a man named Bob Stevens, at the AMI building in Boca Raton, Florida, which, as you point out, is the publisher of The Star and the National Enquirer, those sorts of publications.
Well, the National Enquirer has gotten better. I mean, I'm not trying to defend them, but over the course of our lifetime, it has changed. And
yes.
It's gotten, you know... Can I say more responsible? I guess in a relative sense, yes, it's gotten somewhat more legitimate and more responsible in terms of its investigative reporting.
Well, Frank, I hate to admit this to you, but it really has been a long time since I've taken a look at an issue of the National Enquirer. But I will certainly take your word for that.
All right,
absolutely.
Well, I'm not saying that they're on the same level as mainstream media, but I'm saying that they, over the course of my lifetime, I've seen a change. There's several political stories that they've gone after and been proven true and correct about, you know?
Oh, that's great.
You know, so certain stuff that only they uncovered. What are the other field offices that you've served in?
St. Louis, Missouri, Norfolk, Virginia, San Diego, California, and now Knoxville, Tennessee.
Okay. So then you'll probably be here for a few years and then head back up to D.C. is the plan, or how does that work?
Well, actually, I plan to retire right here.
Oh, lucky you.
FBI agents are eligible to retire at 50, and there is a mandatory retirement age of 57. So I hope to finish out my career right here in Tennessee, which is where I grew up as a boy. I could not be more pleased to be here.
Oh, fantastic. Now, let's talk about some of the other parts of FBI training. I mean, I look at you in your fancy suit, and you look like a businessman and very professional. But you've got to be able to, you know, strap on a gun and pin on a badge and fire guns and all that kind of stuff. Let's talk about that aspect of it. You know, I'll call it the cops and robbers part, the TV part, where
right.
FBI agents, you know, get to play cops and robbers and when you go practice, but in real life, it's life and death, right?
Right, it is. And for that reason, we spend an awful lot of time training our agents on the tactical aspects of the job, although in reality, that ends up being less than 1% of what they perform on a day-to-day basis. Uh-huh. We are an investigative agency, which means we're out there gathering and collecting evidence all the time, which means a lot of interviews with folks, sitting down, talking to people, as well as collecting documents, reviewing and analyzing paperwork and spreadsheets, those sorts of things. But eventually, it does come time to make an arrest, and that is when our agents do have to be prepared. They have to be extremely well trained because we want that to go smoothly, both for our own safety as well as the safety of the person who's being taken into custody.
And certain agents are even more specialized in terms of the SWAT training, right? And what
That's
does it
correct.
Take to move to go from being your average special agent to being your SWAT special agent?
Well, to be on a SWAT team, an agent has to have been in the FBI for a minimum of 3 years. And then generally, we look to take those people who have prior military background or prior law enforcement background onto the SWAT team. We're also looking for people who are in extremely good physical condition. Because once you put on one of these vests that weighs about 40 pounds, you've still got to be able to run and jump and move around very quickly. So mm-hmm. we're looking for those people who have a very high level of physical fitness. So in many respects, being on a SWAT team, it is a young man's game. But we're looking also for those people who have, through a series of life experiences, been able to demonstrate the kind of good judgment that we're looking for, too.
What kind of people are the FBI looking for in general? I mean, are you actively seeking out new recruits? I guess, if people like you have to retire by the time you get to 57, that means you need to get the 20-something-year-old guy and girl to sign up. Who is the candidate? Describe for me the future FBI agents. What are they doing now, you know, as they're in their college years and in their 20s?
I'm really glad that you asked that question because due to the retirement of the baby boom generation, we are going through some unprecedented hiring right now. We're going to hire about 800 new special agents this year. And contrary to popular belief, we're not really looking for that individual who has a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. We're looking for someone who has majored in accounting and can help do white-collar crime. We're looking for someone who has majored in a foreign language like Arabic or Farsi and can help with the international terrorism aspect. We're looking for people with prior backgrounds in military intelligence. We're looking for those who have a degree in computer science or systems engineering who have served as systems administrators and can help with our cyber crimes that we investigate. So we're looking for all sorts of different folks from all different walks of life, but we really are looking for that high level of specialization in a particular area.
So are we talking people who are 22 or are you looking a little older? What age range are we thinking for the next crop of recruits, FBI recruits?
The minimum requirements to become an FBI agent, you must be at least 23 years old, have a 4-year degree from an accredited university, and then have at least 3 years of responsible work experience on top of your degree. But
okay.
you've gotten out, you've gone to work in that kind of first level, first tier job, and you've been able to perform successfully and responsibly.
And I guess the best way to start as a potential FBI recruit or the parent of a potential FBI recruit, send them to the website.
Right. And
because if you can't find that, they really don't want you. If you can't find your way to FBI.gov, you are at that point disqualified. If you don't mind me saying.
Right. It is very simple, FBI.gov, and our job site is FBIjobs.gov. So
yeah,
all of our jobs are posted there.
Yeah, the link is right here off to the side anyway, so it's pretty easy to find. All right. Richard Lambert, the special agent in charge of the FBI here in Knoxville. There's so much to talk about. Rather than me throw out the next topic, let me make sure I hit all your bullet points. What is the main thrust that when you go out and speak to the people of East Tennessee, you always want to say, this is what we want. You know, watch out for terrorism. What else?
Terrorism is really the focus right now. And my concern there is that it's been over 8 years now since we've been hit with an organized terrorist attack back in 9/11. And as a result of that, I think we as a nation have become somewhat complacent. And so the thing I like to try to emphasize is we're really asking people to report those suspicious activity indicators that they see when they see them and not just pass them off as, oh, that's probably nothing.
Well, there was an anecdote that you told us in one of the presentations. I think it occurred in England, but it was about the people who ran the self-storage facility.
That's right.
So maybe you can give us a version of that story, you know, because that's something I think we can all relate to, because most of us think, well, I'm never going to be in the FBI, but you do go to work at the self-storage place right here in East Tennessee, or you do go to have a job at the rentals place or whatever, you know, renting trucks and stuff like that. You are the eyes and ears of the nation, and you can help the FBI. And tell us how.
That is really a great example. What happened is the Brits, in looking into what went wrong and what allowed the 7/7/2005 London subway bombing to take place, the Brits conducted a study. And in their study, they found that the London subway bombing, while it succeeded, there was actually a parallel plot being carried out by a group of affiliate terrorists who were intending to bomb nightclubs in London using large vehicle-borne explosive devices that would be loaded with a combination of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil, much like the bombing of the Oklahoma City building.
Yeah. At some point, McVeigh had to get a truck. At some point, McVeigh had to get all that fertilizer and all the other, you know, chemicals involved. Right.
The single thing that thwarted the plot to bomb the nightclubs was a call that came in to the police from some people who owned a storage facility. And the reason they called in is because they discovered someone was storing about 1,200 pounds of ammonium nitrate fertilizer in that storage facility, and they thought that was unusual. Now, when they called in to the police with that information, the police investigated, and they actually determined that the person renting that storage facility was on their radar screen as someone who might be affiliated with terrorism. So that then gave the police the evidence they needed to show that this person both had the capability as well as the intent to carry out the attack, and they were able to intervene and thwart what could have been a devastating attack on the London tourist industry.
So that's what you were talking about earlier, about that window of opportunity while that particular terrorist attack was still in the planning stages.
Exactly, exactly. And of course, the storage of fertilizer in and of itself, there could have been an innocuous, legitimate purpose for that. But in this case, there wasn't. And thankfully, people did take the initiative to pick up the phone and call somebody and let somebody know.
Well, there was another guy in the news recently, I think within the past year, who bought a bunch, went to a beauty supply store and bought like gallons and gallons of, I don't know, what was it? Not nail polish remover, but, you know, some normal chemical that you'd buy at a beauty supply store. But he bought a large volume of it.
Right. And
do you know what I'm talking about?
The individual you're referring to.
Of course you do. You're
in
the FBI.
It's Najibullah Zazi, who has been arrested and charged with a terrorist plot in New York. And as best we can determine, Najibullah Zazi was attempting to make a homemade explosive preparation known as TATP, triacetone triperoxide. One of the components of TATP is concentrated hydrogen peroxide.
That's what it was.
And that concentration can be found in hair color products. And those hair color products are available at beauty supply stores. You can walk in off the street and get a hydrogen peroxide preparation that is 60 to 70% concentrated. And Najibullah Zazi did exactly that. He purchased several very large containers of hydrogen peroxide and was initially questioned by the clerk at the store about the large purchase. And Najibullah Zazi simply said, "I have a lot of girlfriends." And the clerk kind of just took that at face value. And but that was certainly an opportunity. That is exactly the kind of suspicion indicators that we would like for people to call in and tell us about.
Well, you must be pretty good at this detective stuff, because somehow you were able to get from me going, "some guy with nail polish remover," all the way to a specific guy in a specific case, and it turned out to be hydrogen peroxide. So my compliments.
Well, thank you, Frank.
Yes, there was some guy, and he liked nail polish remover, and, you know, that wasn't it at all. It was... Well, I appreciate your picking up the loose ends that I was dropping all over the place.
Nope, absolutely.
All right, we're down to our last minute with Special Agent in Charge Richard Lambert from the FBI Knoxville Field Office. The best way to contact you is look on the internet and find you at knoxville.fbi.gov, correct?
That's correct. Or you don't even have to remember that. Just type in FBI Knoxville to whatever your internet search engine is or browser, and the first entry that comes up will be that for the FBI Knoxville Field Office.
All right. And you guys are using technology. I know I've followed the Twitter feed for the FBI press office to find out about the latest arrests and things that are going on with you guys.
We are on Twitter and we are on Facebook, and we've got a lot of information about what's happening locally in the FBI at the webpage there that you identified.
Fantastic. Special Agent in Charge Richard L. Lambert Jr. Rick Lambert, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate you being here this morning.
Thank you, Frank. It's a privilege.
Yes, well, mine. The privilege is all mine. We'll keep congratulating each other off the air.
All right.
This is the East Tennessee Report, a public affairs program of the Journal Broadcast Group. My name is Frank Murphy. We'll talk to you again next Sunday.